Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. In today's world, often people feel like their lives are turned upside down. And it can become a situation that can be heartrending. It can involve so many different aspects of life experience. But one of the changes that has occurred, I'd say especially in the last 20 years, is that more and more grandparents are ending up taking care of their grandchildren. Now, years ago, when people lived on farms, that was the norm. Families lived together. Grandma and grandpa, just like the Waltons you used to watch on television, and they're still doing the reruns, it was something the whole family stayed together. Well, in the more recent times, families lived in different parts of the country. Something happens. Grandparents, the thought that they might be traveling and cruising around the country in an RV, find all of a sudden they may become custodians for their grandchildren. My guest today is Harriet Hodgson. She is a woman that has a tremendous background. She's put together a book, Help, I'm Raising My Grandkids. Grandparents Adapting to Life's Surprises. Harriet Hodgson, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, Harriet, you write quite a bit. You have been an independent journalist for 35 years, and it's going on 40. You have been involved with the Association of Healthcare Journalists and Association for Deaf Education and Counseling. You've written 31 books. You've got all kinds of articles on the internet. You've done all types of talk shows. You live in Minnesota, and your life was totally turned into a much different reality because of something that happened to your daughter. Would you share that story with my audience?
In 2007, my daughter died from the injuries she received in a car crash. It was a snowy February night, and actually 2 days later, my father-in-law died, so we had two deaths on one weekend. Mm-hmm. 8 weeks later, my brother died, and in the fall of the same year, my grandchildren's father died in another car crash.
Oh,
so
for heaven's sake.
Yeah, I mean, Hollywood couldn't make it up. And
Wow. So
his death made my twin grandchildren orphans. And suddenly my husband and I were GRGs, grandparents raising grandchildren.
Amazing. Now, when you went through this, what was the process that occurred? Because here are two grandchildren. Were they immediately put into the care of social services when this happened? What was the process that you went through?
Well, we were very fortunate, Donna, and that is that our daughter had a will. And in the will, we were listed as the children's guardians. So I remember very vividly standing outside the emergency room door, and, I mean, the whole family is in shock, my husband and I and my grandchildren, who were 15 at the time. And I turned to them, and I just said, "You're coming home with us." And the second that sentence left my mouth, I knew my life had changed.
And, wow.
You know,
so
and
these were teenagers.
And it's one boy and one girl. And mm-hmm. I was very fortunate because I'm a former teacher who changed careers. And if you had ever told me that I was going to be using that training at this time of life, I would have said you were delusional. But I did, and I really am fortunate in that I had 2 degrees in teaching. I'd been in a classroom for a dozen years. I changed careers, but I kept up with education, and I had raised teenagers, and so I thought, I can do this. The challenge was to grieve for four family members and stay upbeat for teenagers, and that is some challenge.
Well, it would be a challenge for anyone. And you are a lady that's in your youthful 70s, so we're not talking about someone in their 50s. We're talking about someone who, again, in your life, you and your husband and your wildest dreams never thought that, one, you'd be going through this many death situations in the family, and in addition to becoming parents, surrogate parents, to these two teenage kids.
It was a jolt, because you could say we were living retirement lives, although I continue to write. But I had close friends of mine. They said, well, you are going to have to give up your career in order to care for your grandchildren. And I thought, oh, well, if I do that, it's like another death in the family, and it will be mine.
Right, so, you didn't have to.
No, and a week after my daughter died, I sat down at the computer, and I made a promise to myself. And I said, I am going to keep being me, but I'm going to protect and care for my grandchildren, and I'm going to write my way through this darkness. And that is exactly what I did.
I think that was a wonderful choice, and it's a wonderful discipline that anyone can use, because through the aspect of writing, that allows a lot of emotions to flow that maybe you cannot verbalize out loud, that I think is just a terrific thing to do. Now, I want to cover some points that you bring out in your book. And you said the extenuating circumstances that happened to you, where you ended up with the care of your teenage grandchildren, the primary concern for kids often is with single parents and divorce. And you say teen pregnancy is one of the reasons, and I know, I've known people that have done exactly this. They've taken over the care of a young girl's babies. The grandparents have done this. Interestingly enough, you say one of the trends is AIDS, incarceration of parents. I've also had clients that have gone through that. Parents that are on drugs, abuse and neglect, and just like in your case, death, or perhaps even disability of parents, where they're not able to take care of their children. And I really liked one of your comments. You said, grandparents should not let themselves be used as a divorce weapon. That, I think, is so important. I have seen so much harm done because of people getting divorces using children and other members of the family, and I'll use your word, as weapons against the other party. And this has been on both sides, husbands, wives, it doesn't make any difference. And I think that that's really a sad thing. But it does happen. How can grandparents stay out of this? Because it's so easy for them to take sides.
Well, it is something that we also faced, because our daughter was divorced. And actually, when she died, her former husband said, I will move into the house with the children, and I will care for them until they graduate from high school. But, of course, that didn't happen. And it wasn't a very good arrangement. It was very stressful. But my husband and I were very careful. We never criticized our former son-in-law. We would help our daughter and let her ventilate when he was not present, but we never criticized him, and we always tried to encourage him. And I think this worked in our favor after he died. Mm-hmm. And I think also, you know, you have to think about what your role is. And I told my granddaughter, I said one day, I want you to know that I'm not trying to be a substitute parent. I am your grandmother, and I will always be your grandmother. And saying that you are a substitute parent or acting like you are can really start hostility. Mm-hmm. And because the children missed their parents. And I know so many of our friends said to me, well, the kids are just so lucky to have you. Well, they didn't want their grandparents. They wanted their parents back. Mm-hmm. And so what we tried to do, and it was a slow process, is we tried to start telling stories about their parents that they could remember, and some of them, you know, made us laugh. And that's just what we needed. And I was very concerned. I wanted the kids to have good food. I think good food is brain food.
Yes.
So I'm a made-from-scratch cook. And so I, you know, said, okay, you know, you're going to have healthy meals here. But the first few meals that they had with us were fuel stops. They ate so quickly I thought they might be ill. And then they just jumped up and went back to their rooms. Mm-hmm. So we bought a pendant light and we hung it over the table to try and foster coziness. And over time, that became a family place and a healing place and a place where we now can continue to tell stories about parents and share some laughter together.
I think you presented something that's very, very positive, and that is that young people, when there is that routine or that ritual and there is that exchange and there's that interaction, it really does give them that sense of stability, that sense of safeness. Because
yes,
when you're coping with the reality of death, and it's going to happen to every single one of us, when the first aspect of mortality is introduced into your life, depending on how it is handled, enables that person to deal with their own mortality. Even though they're young, they realize that people that they love are going to be taken away from them, or can be taken away from them. And it's a real awakening. It's a big awakening for them. And I think what you suggested really gave them a lot of stability. And I have to chuckle because you said there were things that you lost when you became a grandparent, but there were things that you gained. You said you had the loss of a quiet house, and I think any parent with a teenager. I'm just talking with a friend of mine, and she's in her late 70s, and she went over to visit her sister, who's in her 80s. She came from a good-sized family. And she said, I couldn't believe it. I didn't have music. The kids weren't playing their guitars. I actually got a good night's sleep.
Well, we had all of that, Donna. We had the rock music, trumpet practice, drum practice. My granddaughter was in choir, so she would be bursting into song. And, you know, the whole atmosphere of the house changed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. You know,
That's just the way it is. And like you said, lack of privacy, irregular meals. We don't need to have teenagers to have an irregular meal pattern. I mean, that's just that's just the way of our life. I mean, that's just what goes. And lots of times when you could do things at the last minute, you realize that you can't, that you have to really think about what you're going to do. Because when you don't have kids around, you just do stuff. But
sure,
then when you have teenagers, or maybe you've got little ones, it's like, oh, my goodness, I forgot all about the things that may have to take an extra pair of clothes. And, you know, all of these things. It really is a lot going on.
And we had to show up for gymnastics meets and band concerts and all of these things. And, of course, we were the oldest people at the gymnastics meet. And I remember one night a toddler came up to me, just learning to speak, and she pointed her finger at me and she said, "You grandma." And I said, "Well, yes, I was." Well, I thought that was the end of it. Oh, no. Every meet she came up to me, "You grandma." So I had no doubt that I was a senior citizen.
Oh, yes. They do love to remind you of that, don't they? It's it's one of those things that just happens. But it really added to your life. But with this situation with your grandkids, dealing with grief, with something, and you've talked about that to a degree, and you have wonderful coverage of that in your book. But also the adjustment of these teenage kids to the environment you're in, and you had to let them know they had responsibilities. You were not going to just let them come in. They had to be a part of the household. They were up in a home. This was something where they had to learn how to do laundry and wash dishes, do things like this. How did you manage that with these two teenagers?
Well, I was blessed in that their mom had already taught them how to do laundry, so I asked them to continue. Mm-hmm. Although a lot of times they didn't quite finish the job, like stuff would still be in the dryer. I asked them to wash their sheets every week, and any parent of a teenager or even college students know that this is not something that's built into the genes, washing sheets regularly. Mm-hmm. And so finally I downloaded a giant picture of a bed bug from the internet. And I put it on the door, and I can tell you, that picture scared me, and I think it scared them. And after that, they wash their sheets regularly. We have a curfew in Rochester, Minnesota, and we were very glad of that, because when they first moved in, their urge was to hang with friends, as they would mm-hmm. say. They hang. And, of course, teenagers turn to friends first for comfort, not to family members. They turn to friends. And we would say, you know, you have to be home by curfew. And if they were not home, we called them and said, where are you? When are you going to be here? And they did not like that. And mm-hmm. I finally said, we have to do this. We are your legal guardians, and we have to watch out for your welfare. Now, it has also worked in their favor. One time, my granddaughter didn't want to do something. And she said, oh, my grandparents wouldn't let me do that. And I think she was grateful for mm-hmm. that structure and enforcement mm-hmm. of family rules.
See, I think that is very important for any youngster, for any child. They need to have boundaries. And like you said, your granddaughter was perhaps being encouraged to do something by a peer which she didn't want to do, so she could use you as that out.
Right.
Saying, oh, I'm going to be dead in the water. I'll be on curfew big time. I'll be grounded. I won't be able to do anything. No, 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 no. My grandparents get wind of this. Bad news. So you're right. They need to know that their environment is safe. They will complain a lot because this is a big adjustment that they had to go through. It's different when you have a little five-year-old to having a teenager and dealing with that. So you have challenges with whatever age you may end up working with. And something that you talked about was setting new goals and also legal help. Now, this is something a lot of people just feel so lost about. So many times an accident will happen and kids are orphaned, like your grandchildren were, and there's no will. What do they do? I mean, there have been some real nasty battles over custody of
children. And some grandparents actually have to go to court and legally adopt their grandchildren in order to protect them. But, mm-hmm. you know, when you think about it, Donna, we are saving the next generation. And, you know, you do what you have to do. Social services may be able to help you. There are lawyers who give free legal advice. We used a lawyer who had actually been our daughter's friend. Mm-hmm. And she understood the situation. She is the person who worked out the divorce arrangement. And it was really reassuring to have her on our side. And I remember the first time we went to court, you know, she spoke for us at the beginning. And later, when we went to court again, when the arrangement was rescinded, she represented us again. We never said anything. We weren't asked to say anything. But when the arrangement was rescinded, there was a kind of a pause in the courtroom. And the judge looked up at us, and he said, thank you for taking such good care of your grandchildren. Mm-hmm. And I thought first that I'm going to burst into tears. that he said that. But then I thought, you know, he probably hears and sees a lot of sad stories. But, you know, I think legal help, sometimes you just can't avoid it. You need it to get through the maze. And our lawyer helped us do that.
And I know that you have a number of references in the back of your book. Now, you have also the information or the concerns about insurance. When there is that member of family that passes away and you are open to being the custodian of the children, the guardian of the children, there's all kinds of things that have to be looked at. Insurance policies, and again, there's a dilemma. If someone doesn't have a will versus having a will, it can make all the difference in the world.
It can, and we were fortunate in that my former son-in-law had a dental plan that the children could still use, and health insurance that they could still use. And I don't know whether listeners realize that we were also fiscal conservators. And when you are a fiscal conservator in the state of Minnesota, the paperwork is a paperwork blizzard. And it is overwhelming. You have to fill out reports, financial reports on savings and other things. And so finally, my husband and I divided the duties. And we did it traditionally, and we said, okay, you are Mr. Finance, and I am Mrs. Homemaker. Mm-hmm. And not mm-hmm. that we didn't get together on many things, but he took over those reports, and he had still been working part-time. But by the time he handled all of these estates, which was his father's estate, remnants from his mother's estate, our grandson's estate, our granddaughter's estate, our daughter's estate, and our own estate, he realized that he had to quit working altogether. And mm-hmm. and that was a painful decision for him.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you have that many levels of responsibility, and working with estates is a lot of work to make sure that everything is done. And many people that have worked as executors of estates have said it's a thankless job because
yes.
there is so much detail, including dealing with taxes. And that's something that people don't even give a thought to. They
right.
say, well, if there's property, there's inheritance money, then that's it. You just take care of it. It's not that simple. Dependent on where you live, and the laws of the land of where you live.
Yes. Well, we had to do, you know, the income taxes. We had to go through inheritance and what the kids, you know, inherited from their mother. We set up a trust fund for them and the arrangements for that fund, when they can access it. The other thing we faced, and this is very common, our daughter had a nice house. You know, she was a composite engineer. She had an MBA, a very respected engineer. And all of a sudden, we had an extra house. And the kids couldn't live there alone.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went over to the house. And, you know, it was just heartbreaking when their dad died, because my granddaughter loves Christmas, and she had set up a tree early, a welcoming tree in the front entry, and another tree in the living room. And the stairway was all wrapped in garlands. And I walked in, and I thought, I have never seen such a sad sight in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And then we realized that we had to empty this house and the garage.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to do all these things. Well, we tried. We had good intentions. And we would go over there, and we'd start working, and we would burst into tears. We were only good for a half an hour's worth of work because we were grieving for four people.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. finally, we had to finish the lower level, a project she had started, but we couldn't put the house on the market until it was done. Rochester had a huge rainstorm. The sump pump failed. So all of the work we did flooded. We had to do it again. And one of the workmen had a suggestion for us. He said, you know, southeastern Minnesota has been hit by a flood, would you like to donate things to flood relief? And so we donated the contents of our daughter's house to flood relief.
Oh, how, what a wonderful suggestion.
Well, it was wonderful, and his church group came to help, and the truck pulled up, and the volunteers got out. I must say, the minister looked a lot like Santa, and we had a prayer circle, and then they started loading, and it took them about 3 hours to load the truck. I mean, it was, you know, chairs and television sets and tables, the whole thing. And we had packed everything up in labeled boxes. And later, the minister sent me a letter and said that the things that we donated were so needed that the truck was unloaded in 1 hour flat.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that's a very good thing to consider, because I know of someone that just passed away a week ago, a single guy, and that suggestion would enable a person, the executor, to be able to just take care of all of that and to unload so many things, because he doesn't want to be bothered with a garage sale or anything else.
No.
And as the executor, he could do that. So that is really a wonderful, wonderful suggestion. Now, we've got a few minutes here. One of the things that you had to contend with because of teenagers, and of course anyone that ends up being a caretaker for a child has to contend with, and that's school. That is a whole different agenda. You said earlier, taking your daughter to gymnastics, and you have these different things that have to be looked at. Of course, school has a schedule, and you're going to have, you're really going to have to put a lot of time, effort, and energy into the children, because they're going through their grieving process as well, and they're having to deal with all of the things that, in your case, teenagers have to deal with. And the communication aspect is a big one, and it really can pose a strain on your marriage. How was it that you and your husband, being in your 70s, how did you deal with this? I mean, you have the wisdom of years. You both have been through ups and downs in life. How were you able to manage a date night?
Well, we did. And we would just, you know, I would have food ready for the kids, or say, here, you know, we have this on hand. You can cook it. And then we'd say, we're going out to dinner. Now, I will say I am one of the most blessed women in the world. I am married to a marvelous, devoted husband. And we have taken care of each other through the years. And we just made a pact. We said, okay, this is going to be a hard road, so we're going to draw on the marriage account. It's a full account. We've got many years of support and love and understanding. And it's just a given. We're going to draw on the account. And we did. And we are continue to be devoted to each other. And even though it was hard, right after our daughter died, we celebrated our 50th anniversary. And so we decided to turn that into a mini family reunion. And that got a lot of family members to come to town, to gather together. And we wanted the kids to see their support system. Mm-hmm. And family is their support system and continues to be so.
Well, Harriet, I just think that your book, Help, I'm Raising My Grandkids, Grandparents Adapting to Life's Surprises. I think even if you weren't a grandparent, I think parenting is always a challenge. And I think you give so many wonderful tips in here about family, how to pull together in an emergency. I think someone younger even would benefit from this. And life is always going to have its ups and downs. There's no other reality that I'm aware of. And I think that you and your husband just did a phenomenal job, and obviously you're still involved with your grandkids, and they're maturing and growing up in their own special way, and one day they're going to be out on their own, and what you have done and your husband is going to enable them to have a good sense of solidarity about their life, which I think is so valuable. Now, for those of you listening, Harriet Hodgkin's book has so much in the way of reference material. in it. And if you know of anyone that's going through this kind of a scenario and they're just sort of pulling their hair out or they feel like they're all alone, they need to know they're not. So go to her website, HarrietHodgson.com, and that's H-A-R-R-I-E-T, single T, Hodgson, H-O-D-G-S-O-N. And I think you will enjoy her stories. You will enjoy the facts that she presents. And she comes from so many different perspectives. And it's meant to help those of you that are dealing with this kind of a scenario. Or you might be witnessing a divorce in the family, something going on, and you go, oh my goodness, what would happen if I had to become a caretaker for children? Well, Harriet's pretty well got it nailed down. Help, I'm raising my grandkids. Harriet Hodgson, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you.
This is Donna Sebo. We are taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Have you ever wanted to be in an environment of people with unique psychic abilities? There is a special event taking place on September 15th at 6 p.m. at the Roosevelt Hotel in Seattle, Washington, that will give you that opportunity. Dr. Pat Basile will be the guest speaker for this healing program. Michael Shane and Monty Burgess will be demonstrating their individual talents in mediumship and music, answering questions that you might have. There will be a silent and live auction, wine tasting, and much more for you to enjoy. This fundraising event is for the healing and educational programs of the Ascension Foundation. Awaken to love and experience the gifts from Spirit. Cost per person $75 to pre-register, or for more details, call 800-508-6437. That's 800-508-6437. You can email info at michaelshane.com. That's michaelshane.com. This is a one-of-a-kind event you won't want to miss. Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Welcome back. Telephone number if you would like to call in and chat with me today. I would be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Give me a buzz at 888-627-6. 008. That's 888-627-6008. We have got a fun lineup this week, and I want to let you know who's going to be with us. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about Savannah. Yes. Savannah is one of the most haunted cities in the United States. Tobias McGriff, wow, has he got some stories. Why? He has a midnight zombie tour. Woohoo! Well, I know it's not Halloween, but who cares? This is really going to be a lot of fun, so I hope you will join me and tell your friends about it. Gail Casper is going to be with me in a couple of days. Unstoppable. She is all about encouraging people to be successful. Very much to the point, Gail has got some great tips. And then we're going to be talking with Ashley Rooney, today's historic interiors. It's much more than that. Have you ever seen an old, old house? Maybe it's a historic landmark, and you walk in and you're just ooh and aw about it because there's just such a wonderful persona. Well, lots of these places have been destroyed, and modern buildings went up. Well, this is about historic landmarks where people have decided they were going to redo them and bring them to life, and the history about so many of these places is wonderful. Many times they're open to the public for visiting. Other times they're private residences. So we're going to be talking with Ashley about that. And then Robert Rose is going to be with us, Abuses of Power in Education. Now, this is something where this man is coming from his own personal experience. He is a very skilled teacher. He loves it. He has a passion for it. And he's a little bit novel in the way that he works with students, but they just excel and they soar beyond anybody's expectations. And, of course, that's what every good teacher wants their students to do.
Yes,
so we're going to be finding out about the inside information on education from a person that worked in the system for a lot of years, and I think you will enjoy his comments. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. By the way, I've got a class coming up on November the 3rd. It's Quantum Mind 4. It is going to be held here in University Place in Washington. For those of you who are listening in Washington, if you're interested in it, I'm going to be sending out an email blast, but you can always call my office for more details. Robert Newman is going to be talking about health and longevity
in the
world of knowledge that came from China. So we're going to be discussing that. Also, I am going to be, in my portion of teaching, we'll be talking about your own psychic development, why it's valuable, and you will be able to demonstrate to yourself your own intuitive perspective. So more information I'm going to be giving to you, but if you're interested, you'd like to register for the class, just give me a call at 253-582-5604. We've got a caller on the line. Let's take this call. And caller, first name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Hi, Donna. My initial is JL, and I'm calling from Brooklyn, New York.
Brooklyn, okay. JL, what I'm looking at with you, I'm seeing you working on a big batch of papers. To me, it looks like some kind of research. And I think you're going to want to present your research, your proposal to someone. And as you're looking at your stack of information that you are trying to compile into a very efficient package, it's as if I'm looking at something that's maybe 4 or 5 inches high, paper-wise, and it needs to be condensed down to maybe 2 or 3 sheets. That's a lot of work. And so it's going to take you a while to get everything together the way that it needs to be presented. And I'm looking at you saying to yourself, wow, is this really worth it? Should I go through all of this effort? The answer is yes, because you are learning how not only to work with details and information differently, but you're also gaining a level of confidence that I think is going to serve you in a very valuable way. So you're breaking through your own glass ceiling. That is how I will describe it. You're breaking through your own glass ceiling. And I'm just seeing you so excited saying, I finally did it, I finally did it, I finally did it. And so there is a part of yourself that has had, I would call, a very fearful demeanor. And because of your finishing what you start out, because of your doing the work that's necessary, getting it done, you're going to realize that you're going to be able to move forward in the way that you want. And you are just proving some things to yourself. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised if you end up relocating by midsummer next year into a working environment that you're really, really going to like. So there's a lot going on with you. And this is a lot of hard work that's facing you, but it's well worth every bit of the effort. So don't drop the ball. Keep on moving forward, because the benefits are going to just be wonderful. The results for you, mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually, are just going to be great. I'm just seeing you having a big weight taken off of you just because you've been able to complete what needed to be completed. What's on your mind, JL? What would you like to ask me?
I guess you pretty much explained whatever I wanted to ask. I just started a program recently, and sometimes I have self-doubts if I can finish it. But I guess based on what you just said, I should be able to finish it.
I'd say so. I'd say so. Don't focus on what isn't working or your frustration. Don't get yourself a strong cup of tea and just say, okay, I'll do this. But reward yourself, because there is an aspect of mental fatigue that can come in. And sometimes maybe you need to just step up and away from the computer, from all the documents, and go for a walk around the block, maybe get an ice cream cone or watch the squirrels run up and down the trees. I think you have trees in Brooklyn. And you just need to lighten up at times. Give yourself a break. Mentally refresh yourself. Sometimes it might be watching a cartoon, something utterly ridiculously stupid, so that you make a shift mentally. And then you'll be refreshed, and then you can go back to your project. Sometimes just taking a walk can do wonders for you. But remember to have those little breaks. You might want to set a timer that says at 2 hours, that's maximum. At 2 hours, you take a break. No matter what you've got, maybe finish a sentence you're working on and say, break time. And that's what you do. You make a shift. Maybe do a little physical exercise of some kind. Cup of tea, chocolate chip cookie, I don't know, whatever it is that's going to work for you. But you make a deliberate break so that you can mentally refresh yourself. You're going to do well, Jaywell. This is Donna Sebo. I want to say telephone line is open for you, 888-627-6008. One of the quotes that I came across, and I find it interesting that JL made the comment she did, because the quote I chose for today was stated by Nido Cuban. Said, the trouble with many plans is that they're based on the way things are now. To be successful, your personal plan must focus on what you want, not what you already have. Now, let me read that again. The trouble with many plans is that they're based on the way things are now. To be successful, your personal plan must focus on what you want, not on what you have. Being mindful is a real discipline, and it has been something I have to constantly work on, because if you're like me, you can think of 10,001 different things you need to take care of. I like to-do lists. But I find that I even have little bits and pieces of different things. Oh, I got to take care of this. Oh, I got to take care of that. And I have to sometimes force myself. It's often called multitasking. But you get taken off in directions, and then you don't get things fixed or done. And I really find many times that I just have to put the brakes on and say, wait a minute, I've got this project in front of me. This must be taken care of. I must get it done. If I have a goal, I have to look at that goal and say, I can only do one day at a time, but that's the goal in front of me. And sometimes having a big picture, maybe a vision board that people like to make, whatever it takes, you have to remember to focus on the goal that you're wanting to achieve. And it really does make a difference. I think taking something one day at a time is great. Sometimes we have a lot of things that come in at once. I mean, our guests, can you imagine what it would be like to have one scenario after the other of loved ones passing away and having to cope with that? You take it one day at a time. That's what you deal with. You're mindful about what's going on today. If you're job hunting, you take one day at a time. If you are trying to get sales, you take one day at a time. And you focus on that, and you get it done. We gals are so guilty of this. The guys are so good at being single-minded and focused. I'm telling you, they are amazing. My husband can be so single-minded, and I just say, oh, my goodness, how can you do this? But he won't tolerate interruptions. And many guys are trained this way. It's just part of them. But we gals, well, we have to take care of the kids, the dogs, maybe bills. Maybe we've got our own job, our own business, if you've got a home-based business. So we just, well, I've got to take care of this and that and the other. And we're considered multitasking. We also exhaust ourselves. So I think being mindful, and I address that in my newsletter this month. And by the way, if you'd like to read the newsletter, go to my website, Delphi, like the Delphi Oracle, DelphiInternational.com. And you'll see my newsletter, and that is something that I address in the newsletter. So when I'm sharing this with you, I have to point my finger back at me and say, this is something I have to pay attention to as well. And it makes a difference. Believe it or not, you really do get a lot done when you have that focus. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Oh, and I've got a chocolate recipe for you. Sweet, simple, and easy, a delight to fix. So get that pad of paper and pen handy. We're going to be right back.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Awaken to Love, Gifts from Spirit. For those of you in Washington State, an incredible event is happening on September 15th at 6 p.m. at the Roosevelt Hotel in Seattle. This is a fundraiser for the Ascension Foundation's healing and educational programs. Guest speaker Dr. Pat Basile leads the program. You'll be able to experience firsthand messages from loved ones with Monty Burgess. And also watch internationally renowned Apport Media Michael Shane demonstrate his amazing skills of materializing objects. This and much more, including a silent auction and wine tasting, you'll be able to enjoy. Tickets are $75 per person. To pre-register or for more details, contact 800-508-6437, 800-508-6437, or email info@michaelshane.com. You don't want to miss this one-of-a-kind event. Hi there, it's Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz at 888-627-6008 if you'd like to chat. Meanwhile, let's go for some Rocky Road Bites. Uh-huh. Now, this is so simple. It is so easy to make. And if you're like me, sometimes you want a little bit of something that's really sweet and special. And if you have the time and you want to do something and you wanted to gift somebody a delicious treat and make it a nice portion, you're not going to have to make bucket loads of it. This is absolutely wonderful. Now, you need to have a cookie sheet, and you need to line the cookie sheet with parchment paper and put it aside. Now, here are the ingredients. You need 4.5 ounces of milk chocolate, 2.5 ounces of mini multicolored marshmallows. You could use the plain ones if you want. And then you're going to need 1/4 cup of chopped walnuts, and 1 ounce of dried apricots, where you don't need to soak them. 1 ounce of dried apricots, and you want to chop them up. You know what I'd recommend other than apricots? Cherries. Yes, some dried cherries, or even candied cherries if you have any. this just going to go well. You could use pineapple, too. Don't be afraid to use your imagination here. But apricots is one flavor, and that goes beautifully with chocolate. But I know my husband loves the cherries. Anyway, let me tell you what you do here. Your milk chocolate, you break it into small pieces, and you want to melt it in a double boiler. And you've got to make sure that that upper part of the double boiler, that the bottom of it is not touching boiling water. Now, once your chocolate melts, you want to stir in your marshmallows, your walnuts, and your apricots, or your cherries, or your pineapple, whatever you prefer. And it needs to be the dried pineapple, the candy pineapple, if you're going to use that. You toss it until all of the ingredients are completely coated in the chocolate, and then you place heaping teaspoons of the mixture onto your cookie sheet with the parchment paper, and you chill them in the refrigerator until they're completely set. And then you can remove them, and if you have pretty little paper cups or little aluminum cups, these make such wonderful gifts. Now, you can find, if you can't find many marshmallows, maybe they're sold out, if there's a big baking frenzy, what I would say is just take your marshmallows, big marshmallows, and snip them into little pieces with kitchen scissors before you put them in the melted chocolate. Either way, the minis are a lot easier to work with, obviously, but this is so easy to do. And your nuts, you could use pecans, you could use almonds, whatever you like, but I guarantee you, it'll cause oohs and ahs from people that receive them as gifts. And you know, the holidays are going to be coming up. This you could double, you could triple, you could make as much as you want of, but it's so easy and so much fun. This actually makes about 18 bite-sized candy. And can you imagine putting them in a pretty little crystal dish or a tin and taking them as a gift to someone? Just makes enough. It's really, really nice. And for that special person in your life, very, very nice. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. 888-627-6008. All of us know of someone that's been affected by breast cancer. I have nothing but the deepest respect and appreciation and admiration for the way that people deal with challenges in life. I have a very dear friend myself who is dealing with lymphoma, who has gone through some pretty intense chemo. In fact, they gave her too much. She was given, she's female and she's small, and she was given enough chemo for a 45-year-old male. And this was an error on the part of the medical personnel. And she's dealing with it. She's having to contend with it. Well, there was a woman. There is a woman, not was a woman, is a woman. Her name is Brenda. And she was almost 51 years of age, and she was doing a routine breast exam. In the course of doing this routine breast exam, which is always a good idea, she found a lump. So she ends up going in, getting a mammogram, they do a biopsy, and the verdict came back that she had breast cancer. She needed a lumpectomy and radiation. And after the treatment, she was having a terrible time sleeping. She couldn't sleep more than an hour and a half. It just was miserable. And she said, because of the surgery to remove the lump, she was unable to lift her arm. And she said, the thoughts of having cancer just kept running through her mind. She would cry. She was just absolutely miserable. And what really upset her is that this facility she was going to, and when she had to go in and change gowns, she said it was cold and the standard gowns, hospital gowns, just leave a lot to be desired. And she felt like she was nothing more than just a number. She said, I hate being a nameless patient. So she decided she was going to do a project. She said, I want to feel comfortable. I'm going through all of this stuff, but I don't like what people are dressing me in. She didn't know how to sew herself, but she got this idea while she was at her treatment facility. And she went to a friend of hers who was a seamstress. She sketched out the pattern, and her friend said, oh, I can do that. And she wore this, what she called a hug wrap. And the nurses, when she came in, when they saw her creation, said, oh, that's fabulous. It's absolutely adorable. And another patient who was going through treatment saw it and said, oh, that looks so nice and warm. Where did you get it? Well, she said, would you like for me to make you one? I'll be glad to do it. That's what Brenda offered to do. Well, this is what she did. She made the sleeves wide so that it wouldn't be tight on someone that had to go through the lymph treatment. And often there's swelling and it's very difficult to move your arms. And you know what? The women that were getting these from Brenda said, I feel like a woman again. I don't feel like I'm one of these sterile patients coming in here. And by golly, she said, this is my purpose. And so she has got a site called hugwraps.org, hugwraps.org. It's a nonprofit organization. She's made about 700 of these hand-sewn wraps, all kinds of patterns, and, you know, very colorful. And she said, every stitch in my hug wraps is made with love and understanding because I know what people who receive them are enduring, and I know how healing a hug can be. These hug wraps have been sent overseas to England and Poland and who knows where else. One woman's misery has ended up creating an idea, a concept that is making other people's lives much richer. My goodness, we're out of time. This is Donna Siebel. I'm so glad you were able to join me. Remember, always you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a magnificent day or evening wherever you are. We'll be back here same time, same place tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.